Thanks for joining us. My name is Dan. I'm one of the pastors here, and we are in the season of Lent, which is the 40 days leading up to Easter. And if you're a math guy or a person, you know it's actually like 46 days, but that's because Sundays are feast days. So today, go eat all the ice cream you want and do whatever you want, but keep it within reason. Like if you gave up some unhealthy things, today's not the day to feast, all right? So just a word for the wise. But we're reading through the Gospel of Matthew together, and often a lot of us are reading through a devotional, Lent for Everyone, written by a scholar, N.T. Wright. And if you read this week, you read the parable found in Matthew chapter 20. It's the parable of the vineyard workers. That's what we're going to focus on this morning, and I have to admit up front, it's a difficult parable. If you're like me and you're like right versus wrong, black versus white, justice and injustice, this is a tough one to swallow because it seems like some people get off the hook, but hang with me because I promise there's a good ending to it. So Matthew chapter 20, we're diving right in, verse 1, starts like this. For the kingdom of heaven is like, this is Jesus speaking, that's what he says, and this is an important phrase to kind of lean in on, because it's an illustration of Jesus' domain, or his life, or his community of followers. He says, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like, and so whenever you see this in the Bible, you should say, I should pay attention to this. Let's keep going. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius, which is a day's wage worth of work, for the day, and sent them into his vineyard. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, you also go and work in my vineyard, and I'll pay you whatever is right. So they went. He went out again about noon and about 3 and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, why have you been standing here all day long, doing nothing? Because no one has hired us, they answered. He said to them, you also go and work in my vineyard. And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the workers and pay them their wages. And this is where the frustration begins. Comma. Beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first. The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. These who were hired last worked only an hour, they said. And you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of work in the heat of the day. But he answered one of them, I'm not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? Jesus closes with, so the first will be last, the last will be first, and the first will be last. Interesting story. And actually, in Matthew chapter 19, the chapter immediately preceding what we just read, Jesus ends this narrative that we won't look at today, but he ends it with, but many who are first will be last, and the many who are last will be first. Many, and I agree, that this parable that we just looked at in Matthew 20 actually starts in Matthew 19, verse 30, where Jesus says, the first will be last and the last will be first. He tells his story and then he bookends it at the end again with this mysterious phrase, the first will be last and the last will be first. What's Jesus trying to tell us through this story? What's he letting us in on what it looks like to be in the kingdom of heaven? I think it has everything to do with living our lives here on earth and living life to the fullest. That's why we've titled today's message, True Grace. Britt and I, my wife, sitting right up front, the one I was kissing, who is my wife, we've been married for 3.5 years, so I'm pretty much an expert. If you have marriage issues, marriage questions, just come talk to me. I am an expert, just ask Britt. But if you didn't know, Britt and I met at grad school. She moved up here from San Antonio, and I just, you know, the minute she met me, she was just struck. I don't know what by, but we started dating shortly thereafter, and we got married. And let me tell you, when you're first married, at least for us, and we, Britt was still in school, and I was working a couple of jobs, but then she graduated, and then she got a job, and it was just us, and we were both professionals, and we were living the dream, let me tell you. We were sleeping in on the weekends. We were going out to eat whenever we wanted, spend as much money as we wanted, within reason, Bruce, because I went through Crown Financial Class. Stuck to my spending plan, not a budget, but a spending plan. But we did whatever we wanted. Travel would be like, hey, let's go to Portland. We go to Portland. But if you know Britt, it wasn't like on a whim. It was like, hey, 19 months from now, we should go to Portland. And let me tell you where we should stay and all these things. And our marriage produced an offspring. This is Sutton. We're going to throw her up on the screen for you guys. This is her this week, her four-month birthday. So she was born a little after Thanksgiving. And she's awesome. But our lives have changed a little bit. Everyone asks, like, are you sleeping? And I don't know why, but yes, we're sleeping a lot. Like, last night was an off night. She only slept 8 hours through the night, and we're, like, tired this morning, you know. But our life's changed from sleeping in all the time to, like, now we're changing diapers, and there's spit up and diapers and schedules. And, I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything, but life's changed, right? And Britt went back to work about a month ago, and I'm working two jobs, and then I picked up a third job, only for like a week, and then I quit. But I had a third job there. Britt went back to work, as I said. She's a full-time mom and a full-time employee, and I'm a full-time dad, kind of, and a full-time employee. And let's just say life can be stressful, right? Newborn. And this stress oftentimes can come out as agitation or frustration with one another. And I'm not saying that we have the perfect marriage. I mean, it's close. Again, I'm an expert, but there are times when we potentially take our frustration out on one another, if you will. And Britt will come home from work, and I get to stay home with Sutton a couple of days a week, and Britt gets to stay home with Sutton a couple of days a week, and get home, and it's like, here's the baby, and you know, you're exhausted, and so sometimes we'll fight, all right? I just got to get that out there. And if you can imagine, I'm a pretty fair fighter. Like, I'm pretty level-headed. I'm meek. I'm gentle. Why? Jeez. You guys are laughing. But here's the deal. Like, I'm a competitive fella. So, like, if I'm going to fight, I'm going to win. You've seen me play football, maybe, or you've seen me play softball. If you were on one of my softball teams, I've probably yelled at you. I'm sorry. But I just like to win. I beat Steven and Norton in everything I do, so I'm just pretty used to it. So when we're fighting, I'm digging in. And I'm a good fighter, I gotta say. So Britt will make a point, and I'm like Matlock when I'm fighting, you know? Like, I'm just, like, destroying her arguments. And she'll say something, and like 3-4 minutes later, I'm like reiterating what she said verbatim. Like, I have that good of a memory, and I'm telling her how she's illogical. And by the way, she knows I'm talking about all this, so like any tension, just let it go. She read it. I asked permission. Where did I leave off? Matlock, and yeah, we're fighting, and I'm competitive, and. We'll be in the middle of like this heated argument, and like my veins are popping, and I'm just making an amazing point, and she'll just say, "Okay, enough. We gotta stop fighting, right?" And it's often the more spiritual one of us, which is clearly her, except for on Sundays, because I come to 1, 2, maybe even 3 church services on Sundays. So I'm pretty spiritual on Sundays. But the more spiritual of us, usually Britt, will step back and say, like, look, we got to stop fighting. Like, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? Will you forgive me? The 4 hardest words in the English language together, right? And usually I'm like, no, dude, you have got to understand the gravity of the pain that I feel and the pain that you inflicted on me. Like, no, I don't forgive you in the middle of this fight, right? Like, we got to fight fair, and I need to prove my point. I'm kidding a little bit, exaggerating a bit. I mean, we only fight max 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day. I have problems, but I don't think Britt's fighting fair. And that's the key, right? She's not fighting fair. when she asks for my forgiveness and she says, like, okay, like, let's stop fighting. Let's let logic and level-headedness kind of win here. The reason I don't want to forgive her is because it's not fair. I don't feel like I've proven myself or I've gotten to the point where I can forgive her or she can forgive me. I have a filter in my life, and many of us do. It's this filter of fairness. You see, we go through lives, and at least I go through my life, and most of my social interactions with my family or my friends or people here at church, I'm filtering everything through this filter of fairness. Well, that's fair, that's not fair, that's just, that's unjust. And if you've ever felt this way, or you've ever been in an argument where you feel like it's not fair, I think Jesus' story in Matthew chapter 20 is written specifically for us. You might sit here today and think, no, I know where this is going. And like, you don't just get off the hook for free. Like, there is some justice. There's some fairness in God. And God is fair and God is just. We read that throughout scriptures. And I'd say you're totally right. But I'd also say that I think we don't have an accurate picture of what God's fairness and justice looks like. God is fair and just, just not maybe the way that we think he should be fair or just. I want to watch a short video now. And fair warning, there is a couple of curse words. And we're in church. So if that offends you, please, you can step out. Or if you have kids, that's fine too. And if you don't like that, talk to Norton. Because honest, I just got to say this. He's the one that found the video. And I was like, hey, maybe we should edit out the curse words. He's like, no, I think it perfectly captures what we think when we hear stories like this, when we hear parables like this. So we're going to watch this. It's from Brené Brown. She's an author, speaker. Many of you have read her books. She's wonderful. Let's watch this video about her thoughts on the parable that we just read.
Our neighbors invite us to go to this church, and it's a, you know, it's an Episcopal church, it's dressy, it's like, it's against everything that you're supposed to do, you know, like, it's got Christ in the name, you have to dress up, there are people there I know, you know, and so I think when you're looking for a church, I think if your heart's open, it finds you, you don't find it. So I go, and the very first day I'm there, he talks about the vineyard parable. And so he's like, okay, so then they all get paid, what's the money? The medallions or whatever, and the people who got there at 6 o'clock in the evening get paid the same amount as the people that got there at 6 in the morning. And the people who got there at 6 in the morning thought it was a fair wage until they saw that the people that got there at 6 also got the same. And you know, he was talking about it, and he's like, what do y'all think? And I was like, I think that's bullshit. You know, and I think here's what's going to happen. If you got overpaid on the way home, your wagon's going to break down. It's going to cost you exactly what you got overpaid. That's justice, you know. And then afterwards, like after church, we go to this like adult thing where the kids go to Sunday school, and he talks about, you know, this whole parable around grace. Like, what if there's nothing you can do to earn God's love, or nothing you can do to get rid of it? And that whether you get there and toil from 6 in the morning or 6 in the evening, I was like, no, that's like, I mean, that's just, I came back because I was pissed. I wanted to see what the follow-up was going to be, you know, and so I feel lucky that I go to a church that it's a happy place, and it's a faith, place of faith, but I leave mad as often as I leave, you know, not mad, but like questioning, like that's a terrible parable. I taught VBS, and let me tell you, wait. Yeah, I was out of church for 25 years. Like, I went back to church and had to scrape bumper stickers off my door at the university that said, like, doing my part to piss off the Christians. Like, you know, I had to scrape all those off because I'm going back to a Christian church. So this summer they said, can you teach VBS? And I was like, okay. So I put something on Facebook, like, teaching VBS, and, like, these people are like, not VBS as in vacation, but, you know, people are like, you know, pull your children close. But I did the vineyard parable. And what I did is I bought Monopoly money and paid kids for jumping jacks and said, okay, start doing jumping jacks now. And if you do them for the next 5 minutes without stopping, you're going to get this money. And they're like, okay. And then like, they're like out of breath. They're halfway through. I invite the next crop of kids in to start jumping jack. And you know, they're doing then like 2 seconds left. Some kids just have to do too. And I'm like, well, let me pay you for your jumping jacks. And I pay like the $500 bills to the kids that did it the whole time. And then I go down the line. He keeps handing out these $500 bills. These kids went crazy. they were like, that is not fair. And I'm like, I know. And then the woman who's in the room said, this is where you talk about it being fair. And I was like, it's not fair, right? And I got sucked right back into it. I'm like, how do you think that works? They say God is like this. God doesn't care how long you're doing jumping jacks. God's love. Love's going to happen to you either way. I came this close to saying bullshit. I was like, I still don't get it. I still don't like it. And I like stuff you can earn. And I like those people who are not working as hard as me to pay. You know, so I just keep going back to church hoping the parables get changed. That's what drives my faith. That's horrible. It's not true. But I get it. So I will say that I have, that parable does help with shame sometimes for me. Because when I do something that I'm not proud of, or I respond to something in a way that's not my best self, I always say, you get the $500 Monopoly money too. You know? That's hard. That's a hard concept. That, you know, that's not attractive in this, our world, that's like meritocracy. And don't you think that's a hard concept?
Really describes at least my thoughts on it, and especially that last part about shame. I mean, this week, man, was not a great week for me. And I'm preaching, right? So I'm like, man, this message is for me more than anyone else. But this parable and this story, it's unfair, but yet it's helpful for us to understand and receive true grace from our Heavenly Father. I was in Guatemala several years ago, and we were building the second floor of the church, and it was a little sketchy. We were on these like ladders that were made of tree limbs, no joke, and they were like tied together with baling wire and some screws here and there, and I was busting my butt, right? Just like mixing concrete. It's hot, and like we're scaling ladders and putting center blocks on, and it's like 30 foot down. It was a little sketchy, as I mentioned, but there were some in our group, and they were not working very hard. And I'm like, I was getting so frustrated. And as I was standing there on the scaffolding, God reminded me of this parable. Like, at the end of the day, we all get paid the same. It's not fair, but it's true. This fairness filter that at least I carry, I think we carry through life, it's robbing us of truly experiencing life here on earth. For instance, there's this teaching in the Bible that we're to weep with those that weep and rejoice with those that rejoice. What it means is when people are hurting and crying and suffering or sick, we're not necessarily supposed to take that from them, but we're to walk alongside of them and support them and bake them casseroles and just love them and support them the best that we can. And when they're going through the best monumental times of their life, we're to celebrate with them. But I have to be honest, this is most of the reason I got off social media last year, is I look And I see someone suffering in their life, and maybe, you know, they got a demotion. It's not true suffering, but maybe it is true suffering. When I look at that in the deep, dark, unsanctified places of my heart, I get joy out of other people's suffering. Compare myself to them, and I'm like, well, at least I'm not like that. I'm better than that, right? Or when someone's going through a really, really great time in their life, I'll look at them on Facebook, or I'll look at them at church, and I'll be like, man, like, how'd they get that? Like, their mommy and daddy paying for that car too? Like, what's going on here? And it doesn't allow me to celebrate with other people, because in the deep, dark crevices of my heart, I'm comparing myself to everyone else. I'm ranking myself compared to where other people are in life. You see, that's why Jesus tells us this story. Because the exact opposite is what Jesus desires for us in our life. Jesus said to find fulfillment in life, to find meaning, is to grieve with those that grieve. When's the last time you just entered into the grief of someone else and sat there? Or to celebrate, rejoice when someone is celebrating in their life. That would be living life to the fullest. Instead, we're going around life ranking ourselves compared to other people. We come in this church and we see someone's car in the parking lot. We're like, man, I'm the same age. I'm younger or older than them. They're driving a nicer car than me. Look at their kids. They're just perfect, and they're like doing devotions every morning when they wake up. Meanwhile, my kid's like vomiting everywhere and throwing French fries, you know? Or you see someone at church, and you're like, man, that guy is good looking. Look at me. That person, not so good looking, right? We rank everything in our lives. Google ratings, Yelp, Goodreads, the GOAT quarterback, you know, greatest of all time quarterback, who is clearly John Elway. Hail John. Can you do that? Anyway, we're ranking everyone. Forbes list of the top 50 leaders in the world as if they know every leader in the world, right? Jesus tells us this parable. And the ranking system he's referring to is not some Jesus organizational chart or some high-off, lofty ranking system. It's the ranking system that we innately have in our lives when we're ranking and comparing ourselves to everyone. And Jesus comes and he tells us this parable so that he can, like he does in so many ways in the Gospels, turn it upside down in our lives. He turns this ranking system that we're all used to and we're all living out upside down. He sees life completely different than we do. He would say, you know, that person that you think will end up first in their life, in my rating scale, in my ranking system, they might actually be last. The person that you think's last, fill in the blank of the person that you think is just a drag on society, a waste on society, that person in Jesus's kingdom is going to be first. That blows our mind. But Jesus says, here's how it works for me. The kingdom of heaven is like a vineyard owner, which if you do some math or some deductive reasoning, you recognize that if the kingdom of heaven is like a vineyard owner, this vineyard owner is growing grapes, which is going to be turned into wine, which means it's going to be like a party, and it's going to be really good wine with a really good party, and you're like, yes, the kingdom of heaven is going to be a party, right? Some of you, you're like, yes, finally, I don't have to drink box wine anymore. I don't have to drink Franzia or whatever it's called. And some of us, like me, you're in recovery and you're like, dang it, why isn't the vineyard owner like the LaCroix owner? Or, you know, like, why isn't it like the root beer owner? And you want to drop BS words like Bernay, right? Digressing. So the vineyard owner, he said he's going to go and hire some workers for the day. He goes to this open square to start hiring people. And in fact, as we read, he's going to hire 5 different employee groups. But it says that at the beginning of the day, the vineyard owner goes to hire some workers. So let's say it's about 6 in the morning. And what's interesting, if you picked up on it in the text, is that when he hires this first employee group, he enters into a contractual agreement with the workers. They literally make a contract. They agree to terms. He says, you work the whole day, and I will give you one denarius. The first group of contracted employees, they agree to these terms. Off to the vineyard, 6 a.m., they work through the day, so we can assume that they work 10, 12 hours throughout the day. In the heat of the day, the text even says. And then in a few hours, he goes back to the open square and he hires more people. He does this a few more times. But you'll notice, if you read carefully, that the nature of the agreement between the last 4 employee groups is not contractual, it's just a simple agreement. The vineyard owner says, and I quote, I will pay you whatever is right. Whatever's right. Now, if you're in one of those 4 employee groups, those are some loose terms to agree to, right? Like, I hope this guy's generous. I hope he's not stingy. We're just going to work for whatever's right. But the text also seems to highlight that last group of employee, that last employee group. The text says that they're hired with about 1 hour left in the workday. So we could assume that they work an hour, but I actually think they work less than that because you assume that they had to go into the square, into the open market, hire these men and women, whatever, and bring them back to the vineyard. So, you know, drive time. They could drive a slow car like me, and it's like 10, 15-minute drive, or maybe a walk, probably. They probably didn't have cars then. Thanks for laughing, Alex. So they get back to the vineyard, they got to get instructions, so they probably work like 15 or 20 minutes max, right? They're like good government employees. Work 10 or 15 minutes and get paid for a whole day. That's a joke. I used to be a government employee, so I can make that joke. But this is a scandal, right? This last group, Like they go to the vineyard, they're going to work 10 or 15, let's say it's an hour, and they're going to get paid. They're like, dude, can you believe this? We're getting paid for 15 minutes of work. How happy are they? They're like, dude, I love this vineyard owner. I'll work for him any day. They're whistling while they work. There's extra pep in their step. They're smiling. They probably don't even break a sweat while they're working. They're like, this is amazing. Day comes to a close. Vineyard owner tells the foreman, hey, go pay them. He's like, okay, yeah, I've done this a lot. But the owner says, wait. This time, pay the last workers first and the first workers last. Vineyard owner's like, okay, sure. But Jesus doesn't just say things accidentally. He tells this parable, this story of what his kingdom looks like so that we can understand that he's turning the ranking system upside down. Had the vineyard owner decided to just pay the first group first, this wouldn't be a story. There wouldn't be the drama, right? The first group would have taken their denarius, went on their merry way, and wouldn't have known anything different. But he makes them wait to get paid last. I see them all lined up. Here's the 15-minute workers, and they're waiting to get paid. Here's, you know, the second, third, fourth, the first group. I did that backwards, but I'm not good at math. Anyway, so the last group that's getting paid, they're like, oh, cool, we're going to get paid first. And they get their payment. Maybe they open the envelope or whatever they do. And they're like, oh, we got a denarius. Like, boom. They're like, thank you, Lord. Thank you, vineyard owner. Holla at your boy. Like, I'll work for this dude any day of the week, right? And then this group, the second group that was hired fourth, they're like, okay, cool, yeah, denarius. Third group, they're like, okay. Fourth group, they're like, that doesn't seem right, but hey, I'll take what I get, you know? And then this last group, this is like the whole human condition wrapped up in like five people groups. This last group, the one that got hired first, they're like, what? How unfair is that? They worked 15 minutes. They didn't even break a sweat, but they got paid the same amount that we got paid. This group over here, so excited. This group over here, completely flabbergasted. How unfair is this? Band, y'all can come up. This story, though, is the whole gospel wrapped up in one simple story. Four employee groups, all agreeing with the owner to be paid for whatever's right or fair. The last group paid is in a contract with the owner to get paid. And many scholars believe that this is similar to the first, the Israelite people's contract with God through the commandments, through the rules, through the laws. If you work hard, you can earn God's love. What does the vineyard owner say to those people when they start to complain? He says, take your pay and go. Get out of here. If I could step into this story to that first group of employees, I'd say, no. First, stop complaining. Second, do not leave the vineyard. You have no idea how good the vineyard owner is. Just stay. You've worked hard today, absolutely. And you deserve it. But at the end of the day, none of us deserve what we get. Here's what life comes down to. Will we take what we believe is ours, what we've worked hard and earned and, you know, keep it all ourselves, or will we trust the good, true grace of God and trust what he gives us? We'll have our moments, wake up, or at the end of the day, we're like, dude, God, I've been following you for years, and I still can't get pregnant, or I can't seem to stop drinking, or whatever the sin or the addiction is in your own life. I'm just taking my shovel, taking my ball, I'm going home. Enough of you. Whatever you do, though, don't leave the vineyard. Don't leave the vineyard owner. He might seem unjust, but he is so, so good. And the reason that you're calling him bad right now in your limited view is because he is so good. We're indicting him because he's being too generous with other people, but it's his own money. Isn't that our biggest argument against God? We're down here in our limited perspective in this vineyard called earth, and we're working hard, and we're like, God, that's not fair. And he's like, dude, I am more fair than you know I am gooder than fair. He's on a whole different level. He gives us each true grace. He gives us what's right. If we just trust that he is right and good and holy and that he loves us, sets our soul free to say, God, whatever you give me, I take. Whatever you give me, whatever comes from your hand is good. It's perfect. All of a sudden, we're set free to grieve with those that grieve. We're set free to rejoice with those that rejoice. Because you're content in your own relationship with God, in your own circumstances, and you don't have to compare yourself and rank yourself against other people so that you feel better about yourself. Who do you want to live like in this story? I tell you, I want to live like the 15-minute workers, sitting there, working, barely breaking a sweat, and yet sitting there in the vineyard thinking, oh my gosh, how good are you, God? I'm down here working, and I'm getting paid like the rest of them. And I'm whistling while I work, and I have extra pep in my step, and I'm smiling, and I'm just praising God, thinking, God, thank you for giving me a chance. Because of your grace, your mercy, I have breath. I woke up this morning breathing. This whole thing, it's a scandal. But I'm a 15-minute worker. And I love you, and I'm going to serve you with every ounce of my being. Whatever's right, God, I trust you. This is when life gets deep, gets meaningful, and has purpose. When we trust in the true grace of our Heavenly Father through His Son, Jesus.